I would note again the strategy of discrediting of politics and of politicians. Note the success of that strategy in Italy, as we have seen, and indeed the correspondence between that strategy and the principles of psychological warfare enunciated by Sun Tzu and reiterated in his memoirs by Reinhard Galen. I would note also the manipulation of the media as a component of Licio Gelli's, quote, democratic rebirth. Note the manipulation of the media in this country, both the slanted coverage given to such incidents as the Lanny Guinier appointment by Bill Clinton, the media firestorm utterly distorted surrounding that, ultimately resulted in Bill Clinton's rescinding that particular appointment. Note also that the media are not dwelling on Oliver North and George Bush and the Contra traffic. Oliver North, an individual deeply implicated in some of the misdeeds of the national security establishment and deeply implicated in the Contra-related drug traffic, which was at least, according to Terry Reid, involved in the attempted discreditation or, quote, dirtying up, as he put it, of the Clinton gubernatorial administration. Oliver North, of course, as I speak on 6/26/94, is running for U.S. Senator from Virginia. I noted a number of articles relating to the various aspects, related in some way to the various aspects of the Iran-Contra scandal that emerged over the course of 1 week, that being week before last. From the San Jose Mercury News of Tuesday, June 14th of 1994, we find the following, an AP story also from Austin, Texas, the same place where this particular article comes from. This article that about Celi Castillo was datelined Austin, Texas, 617. Austin, Texas, 614, we find the following. Leader of failed hostage rescue effort in Iran dies. Retired Army Colonel Charles Beckwith, who led the Delta Force's ill-fated mission to rescue 52 American hostages in Iran in 1980, died Monday. He was 65. His wife, Catherine, called police after finding him dead in his bedroom in the morning. Police said he apparently died of natural causes. That may very well be. I would remind listeners that in Radio Free America program number 31, we took a look at evidence that in fact that hostage rescue mission did not fail, but was deliberately sabotaged by elements of our national security establishment and the intelligence community that were opposed to Jimmy Carter, allied with Ronald Reagan and George Bush, and that wished the hostages to be held until after Jimmy Carter's humiliation and consequent election defeat were assured. Among the people involved with various aspects of that hostage rescue mission were Richard Secord and former Air Force operative Dutton. I believe his first name was Richard Dutton, perhaps Robert, in any case, an Air Force colonel named Dutton. Also, Oliver North. I have noted the purposes of this broadcast, a coincidence in time between a number of things related to some of the more sordid aspects of the Iran-Contra scandal. I don't know if they're related, but that is one of the questions that I have. I wonder if indeed Charlie Beckwith's death was a natural death. Could very well be. God knows people collapse and die at the age of 65. I would also note, though, his position in a very strategic situation with regard to the American hostage rescue mission that appears to have been sabotaged, as we looked at in Radio Free America 31. One of the people again note that many of the people connected with that later crop up in connection with the Iran-Contra scandal, including would-be United States Senator from Virginia Oliver North. For those who would dismiss the possibility, and it's only that, and I'm not in any way claiming that there is definitely more to Charles Beckwith's death than a natural occurrence, but I hold open the possibility, barring a more rigorous investigation, and I doubt one will come, that perhaps a signal was being sent. This is only a possibility. One of the questions I have concerns the sending of signals behind the scenes. There has been some severe criticism of Oliver North in connection with his Senate race. The San Jose Mercury News of the very same day as the AP article from Austin describing or detailing the death of Charles Beckwith, the very same day and the very same issue of the San Jose Mercury News, namely Tuesday, June 14th of 1994, carries the following, a Knight Ridder News Service article headlined, "Ex-hostage says North isn't fit for Senate." Dateline Newport News, Virginia, it reads... Terry Anderson, one of the hostages Oliver North tried to free by selling arms to Iran, said Monday that North should not be in the U.S. Senate. While praising North as a Marine combat leader, Anderson said North is an ideologue willing to break the law to achieve his ends. I wonder about the death of Charlie Beckwith at this very time. I wonder if a message was being sent. There may be nothing whatsoever to that, and I want to emphasize that. This is simply a question I have, not a statement I'm making, but I wonder to what extent the powers that be send these kinds of questions, send these kinds of messages, saying if my fears or my inquiries are substantive, that basically, hey, don't criticize Ollie. We can do what we want. We can get rid of who we want. That such things occur is unfortunately a matter of public record. Reading now from an op-ed column that appeared in the San Francisco Examiner of Thursday, June 23rd of 1994. This is by David H. Hackworth, H-A-C-K-W-O-R-T-H. This is Dateline Washington. Hackworth is a retired Army colonel who came up from the ranks and is the America's most decorated veteran. The op-ed column is Dateline Washington, headlined, "Blow the Whistle, Get the Axe." Hackworth writes, "I know about whistleblowing and what happens to the blower. In 1971, after serving as an infantry leader in Vietnam for almost 5 years, I sounded off over the lies told by several presidents, their policy wonks, and brass hats. I said in Newsweek magazine the war was not winnable, so, quote, let's get out now, unquote. I was rewarded for shooting off my big mouth with a booby trap in my Jeep. This was followed by my perfectly good helicopter crashing in Viet Cong territory. After the, quote, terrorist incident, unquote, and, quote, chopper accident, unquote, General William Westmoreland ordered an investigation that added up to over 50,000 pages of fiction, twisted facts, and malice, all because I said losing in Vietnam was mainly his fault. I survived because men of great integrity, Cyrus Vance, Joseph Califano, and author Ward Just, came to my rescue. Without their help, I might have been scraped off the roadside one night after wrapping my car around a tree, my fatal trip supposedly attributed to a liquor or LSD overdose." And then in parenthesis, favorite spook scenarios. So, for those who might find the questions that I have concerning the death of Charles Beckwith, wondering whether it was really natural, wondering whether perhaps a message was being sent that not only were no skeletons to be taken from the closets, particularly no skeletons pertaining to Oliver North were to be taken from the closets, because indeed there are an awful lot of skeletons that Oliver North has placed in closets and elsewhere, or helped to place. And I see Oliver North as one of the individuals envisioned as a possible American Berlusconi, so to speak. The man on the white horse, the, quote, outsider, unquote, to the, quote, anti-politician, unquote, to set things straight after the public becomes disaffected with the political process. That same week, week before last, there were a lot of articles pertaining to one aspect or another of some of these sordid dealings that Oliver North and company had during the Reagan and Bush administrations. In addition to drug trafficking, one of the most obnoxious of the activities engaged in by elements of the North, Bush, Reagan, and national security political national security establishment political milieu was the complicity of those elements in many of the terrorist incidents which attracted worldwide attention during the 1980s. Indeed, there is abundant evidence that there was long-standing complicity between the Khomeini regime and the forces in the United States allied with Reagan and Bush, that they, to a large extent, the as revealed in the landmark research of Farah Mansour, the Reagan and Bush connected sections of our national security establishment actively aided and abetted in the establishment of the Khomeini forces in Iran, as well as in the taking, the actual taking of the U.S. hostages taken from the U.S. Embassy in Tehran and their holding by the Khomeini forces until after Jimmy Carter's humiliation and election defeat were assured. That pattern of cooperation obviously extended right on up through the Iran-Contra scandal when Oliver North and company helped to arm the Iranians, despite the fact that the Iranian fundamentalists were very closely allied with elements of international terrorism. And indeed, the Pan Am 103 insurance investigators report implicates, quote, Middle Eastern terrorists, unquote, largely the milieu of North Associate Manzer al-Qassar, in the bombing of Pan Am 103, which, among other things, eliminated a U.S. intelligence team, a group of military intelligence agents, seconded to CIA, who had come across the, according to the insurance investigators' report, the cooperative pattern between Oliver North and Manzer al-Qassar. We're going to blow the whistle on that. They were deep-sixed with the bombing of Pan Am 103, as was an Office of Special Investigations investigator named Michael Bernstein, who was helping to arrange the extradition of two SS officers from America to Austria to stand trial for war crimes. Pan Am 103 resulted in the elimination of those individuals. That very same week, in fact, the day after the death of Beckwith and the criticism of North by Terry Anderson was announced, namely Wednesday, June 15th, there was another revelation concerning, or another allegation concerning the authorship of the bombing of Pan Am 103. The following is from the San Francisco Chronicle of Wednesday, June 15th of 1994. This is an AP story, Dateline to Beirut, and headlined, Confessed Jet Bomber Linked to Terror Network. It reads, The Palestinian who claims he blew up Pan Am Flight 103 over Scotland was an explosives expert in Abu Nidal's European terrorist network at the time of the 1988 bombing, a former PLO commander said yesterday. Youssef Shaban, S-H-A-A-B-A-N, 29, made the surprise confession Monday during his trial on charges of assassinating a Jordanian diplomat in Beirut in January. Youssef Shaban operated in Europe between 1986 and 1989 with a base in Spain, and he traveled with different passports under various names, unquote, said the former PLO commander, Colonel Munir Makdah, M-A-K-D-A-H, who broke with PLO chairman Yasser Arafat's Fatah faction last year. Prosecutor General Munif Oweidat, O-W-E-I-D-A-T, told reporters yesterday he will not authorize an investigation into Shaban's claim he was behind the bombing because his words have been stricken from court records. U.S. and British authorities have accused two Libyans of being behind the attack and assert the bomb was planted in luggage aboard Flight 103 in Frankfurt, Germany. Passengers and luggage transferred to a Boeing 747 in London for the last leg of a trip to New York. The jetliner exploded over Lockerbie, Scotland on December 21, 1989. All 259 people aboard were killed, along with 11 people on the ground. For many years, Makdah was Arafat's security chief in the Palestinian refugee camp of Ain el-Hilweh outside the southern port city of Sidon. That's capital E-I-N, capital E-L, capital H-I-L-L-W-E-H. He headed Fatah military forces in Lebanon before falling out with the Palestine Liberation Organization chief last year over the autonomy deal with Israel. Makdah now leads guerrillas opposed to Arafat and is a sworn enemy of Abu Nidal, a former Fatah official who broke with Arafat in 1973 and is now one of the world's most wanted terrorists. Also, a recipient of the good favors of the aforementioned Manzer al-Qassar, an individual who was requisitioned by Oliver North to secure weapons for the Contras in the Iria deal that we spoke about in Radio Free America program number 32. And came back to in Radio Free America program number 35. I would note that in Radio Free America number 35, the December surprise, the politics of terror and the exoneration of the secret team, I focused on Pan Am 103 specifically pointed my finger in the direction of Manzer al-Qassar and the Oliver North related segments of our own national security establishment and raised the question of concerning whether the bombing of Pan Am 103 may have helped to get all of the conspiracy charges dismissed against Oliver North. One of the things that brought al-Qassar to mind was the fact that Abu Nidal was being mentioned in connection with the bombing of Pan Am 103 within days after the assassination. I would note the following interesting response on the part of a former CIA counterterrorist official named Vincent Canestrero. He writes, now this, by the way, is from the San Jose Mercury News of the same day as the article about Anderson's denunciation of Oliver North and the death of Charles Beckwith. This is from the San Jose Mercury News, also of Tuesday, June 14th of 1994, article by Mark Feinman, F-I-N-E-M-A-N, and Marilyn Roschka, R-A-S-C-H-K-A, of the L.A. Times, Dateline to Beirut, Lebanon headline, Palestinian tells court he bombed Pan Am jet. Subtitled, Officials Doubt, Confession from Accused Assassin. Skipping down, quote, It's part of an operation. It's deliberately exploiting the use of someone already going down for another crime. In this case, the assassination of a Jordanian diplomat to accept responsibility for something that he could not possibly have done, said Vince Canestraro, a former CIA terrorism specialist. Skipping down, Now 29, Shaban would have been 23 at the time. Quote, That's fairly young to have put together a complicated bomb and such a complicated operation all by himself, unquote, the official added. And the next paragraph, Second, Shaban's claim does not conform with Abu Nidal's usual tactics. Quote, He never went in for aviation terrorism, especially anything as sophisticated as this, unquote, said Bruce Hoffman, a terrorist specialist at the RAND Corporation in Santa Monica. Well, if that's the case, why were the American media filled with all sorts of articles pointing the finger in the direction of Abu Nidal? I would also note that the Shaban base of operations was Spain, like Manzar El-Kassar, who was based in Marbella, Spain. I would note that it was there that he was arrested in connection with the Achille Lauro hijacking, according to Ari Ben-Menasha, a provocation that was set up by a working intelligence group that involved both Israeli Mossad elements and elements of U.S. intelligence associated with William Casey and Oliver North. Manzar El-Kassar not only supplied weapons to the Achille Lauro hijackers, he helped Abu Abbas escape to Yugoslavia, or the former Yugoslavia, after the crime. I would note that among the people associated with the Abu Abbas group were German neo-Nazi Otfried Hepp, a member of the Sportgruppe Hoffmann that we looked at 2 weeks ago, and we're going to touch back on some of the connections of the Sportgruppe Hoffmann in just a couple of minutes. I would also note that Spain is the location of the Nazi government in exile described in Radio Free America number 37, specifically in the September 20th, Radio Free America number 37, we took a look at the Nazi government in exile and its profound connections to the government of Konrad Adenauer in Germany in the late 1950s and in the 1950s and 1960s. By the way, once again, apologies to the newer listener who may be wondering, what in hell is Dave talking about? Nazi government in exile? Jesus, Lord God, he's departed from his senses now. I appreciate that would sound a little strange to the uninitiated. That's not meant to sound patronizing. That is why I put together the archive shows, to provide the documentation for many of the things that I speak about. And again, I don't know what to make past the point of the allegations of Mr. Shaban, whether he's laying a smokescreen or trying to in some way deflect from the allegations now being made against Libya, or whether perhaps he's covering up for Manzar El-Kassar. I don't know. I would note again, however, movement in a number of different aspects of the Iran-Contra-related activities that Oliver North touched on. Pan Am 103, North, according to many sources, implicated with Manzar El-Kassar, implicated by many in the Pan Am 103 bombing, and almost certainly involved in the Achille Lauro hijacking. The aforementioned Manzar El-Kassar brokered the Aria deal. He has very, very strong connections to Abu Nidal and Abu Abbas, among other terrorist elements. He is based in Marbella, Spain, where indeed he is known as the Prince of Marbella. There's been an interesting development in connection with Manzar El-Kassar. He has been allowed to travel to the Damascus, to Syria, despite the fact that he was under arrest in Spain for his alleged participation in the Achille Lauro hijacking. We have noted that he was arrested on indicted on June 5th in connection with the Achille Lauro hijacking. He was formally arrested just a couple of days after Bill Clinton was elected. He, that is to say, Manzar El-Kassar, according to the Spanish press, had previously been protected from arrest by Joseph Zapala, George Bush's hand-picked U.S. ambassador to Spain. Research and translation credit for the following article goes to Dave White, our pan-European translator and researcher. Dave researched the following from ABC, a Spanish daily. The following is from ABC of February 2nd of 1994. Of Manzar El-Kassar's release in order to travel to Damascus in order to visit a sick relative, specifically his brother. ABC writes as follows. Yesterday, alleged arms trafficker Manzer El-Kassar appeared in Madrid Central Court Number 5, headed by Judge Manuel Garcia Castellon, C-A-S-T-E-L-L-O-N, who was processing the Syrian for the Achille Lauro hijacking. Al-Kassar must appear before the court on the 1st and the 15th of every month as a condition of his bail. On January 20th, the so-called Prince of Marbella obtained permission from the National Court to go to Damascus to visit his brother Haitham, H-A-I-T-H-A-M, who was gravely ill. Al-Kassar's permit to leave Spain, denied on three previous occasions, was granted by the first section of the National Court. Two magistrates voted in favor of issuing the permit, one voted against. Judge Sira Garcia, S-I-R-A-G-A-R-C-I-A, argued that Al-Kassar might fail to appear to pay his bail of 1 billion pesetas, or $17.5 million. Nevertheless, the National Court authorized a single visit of no more than 2 weeks and did not exempt Al-Kassar from the conditions of his bail. More on Al-Kassar and his bail. This also researched and translated for us by El País of by Dave White, rather. This is from El País of 2794. The Spanish government authorized Al-Kassar's trip at the highest ministerial and presidential level in order to accelerate the peace negotiations in the Middle East. Al-Kassar had tight connections with Islamic terrorist groups like the one led by Abu Abbas, to whom he had been supplying arms. After his arrest in June of 1992, Al-Kassar offered his services to the authorities. Spain hoped to benefit directly from this collaboration by removing the local Islamic terrorist infrastructure and by clearing up the attack on the El Descanso restaurant near Madrid. While the Israelis and the moderate Palestinians were creating a channel for negotiations, Spanish military intelligence, CESID, was creating a parallel channel in order to bring violent Palestinian and radical Islamic groups to the peace table. So once again, Al-Kassar, a player, at least according to El País, in international power politics. There's an old expression, iron bars do not a prison make. Certainly not for many of Oliver North's associates and for Oliver North himself. Al-Kassar being among Oliver North's associates, an individual implicated in drug trafficking and international terrorism, including much of the international terrorism that Oliver North and the U.S. interagency counter-terrorist networks that grew directly out of George Bush's Vice Presidential Task Force on Combating Terrorism were supposed to fight against. Again, in Radio Free America 32, we went into the Oliver North Manzer El-Kassar Association in the Iria weapons deal. I would note, too, that Manzer El-Kassar's base of operations is in Spain, and that he maintains close relations with many of the European fascists, such as Otfried Hepp, the German neo-Nazi associated with the German Sportgruppe Hoffmann, a major epicenter of Nazi activity in Germany, and one that has been protected to a large extent by elements of the German secret services. I would note, too, that as we looked at in Radio Free America program numbers, Radio Free America program 3, Radio Free America program number 4, and in a big, big way in Radio Free America 22, as well as the two-part miscellaneous archive series dealing with the fascist third position, the connecting links between Nazi elements that were forged prior to and during World War II and that centered around Haji Amin al-Husseini, the self-proclaimed Grand Mufti of Jerusalem and a major in the SS, those relations continued in a very significant way into the post-war period and were strengthened by the CIA Galen-Skorzeny mission to the Middle East in the early 1950s, in which a contingent of Third Reich veterans, many of them SS and Gestapo veterans, some of them war criminals of the first magnitude, were sent to the Middle East to form not only the Egyptian General Staff, but the Egyptian Secret Service for President Nasser of Egypt. That mission was headed up by the aforementioned SS Colonel and Odessa head Otto Skorzeny, the individual whose weapons empire was going to provide the weapons for both the Borghese coup attempt, financed by CIA involving the P2 elements, Michele Sindona, the funding conduit for that coup. Otto Skorzeny led that Galen CIA mission to the Middle East and, among other things, set up the first Palestinian terrorist groups in the Gaza Strip while on that assignment. I am going to note here, for the purposes of record, that the many of the elements which later crop up in connection with the operations of such individuals as Manzar al-Qassar, in turn, one of Oliver North's associates in the Contra supply effort, many of the elements that crop up in the operational environment of Manzar al-Qassar can be traced back to the Third Reich Middle Eastern alliances, which evolved from World War II into the post-war period and are inextricably connected with elements of, quote, Middle Eastern terrorism, unquote, to this day. One of the things that we looked at in Radio Free America program number 32, specifically, and that we detailed in a more lengthy fashion in an addendum to the Radio Free America series about the Iran-Contra scandal, concern Manzar al-Qassar's use of a German company to broker the weapons for the Iria deal. That company was entitled Merex, M-E-R-E-X. In Radio Free America number 32 and the two-part archive series about the fascist third position, we took a look, also, by the way, in Radio Free America number 19, dealing with the strategy of tension in the P2 Lodge, we took a look at Merex as a front for the BND, the Bundesnachrichtendienst, the final incarnation of the Reinhard Gehlen spy organization. We took a look at Merex's service as a BND front for channeling weapons to Pakistan and to India, and also we took a look at Merex's role in channeling BND weapons to Italian fascists, specifically a P2 member named Guido Giannattini, a member of the Italian Secret Services, was the Merex/BND man in Italy who was handling those weapons transactions for BND and for their Italian counterparts. We took a look again at Merex, used by Manzar al-Qassar for the Iria weapons deal. Merex was founded by a Skorzeny associate named Gerhard Mertens, M-E-R-T-I-N-S, later, by the way, being sought by Mexican authorities in connection with the murder of Manuel Buendia, a Mexican journalist investigating CIA activities in Mexico, as well as a number of other related activities. I would note that Gerhard Mertens, a wartime associate of Otto Skorzeny, was greatly assisted in his founding of the Merex firm by Otto Skorzeny. And interestingly enough, Gerhard Mertens was among the Third Reich alumni who was serving in Egypt and advising President Nasser. In fact, he appears to have preceded the Skorzeny mission on behalf of CIA and Galen. We're going to turn now to a book called Fascism Today, subtitled A World Survey. It's co-authored by two Italian political researchers, Angelo Del Boca, capital D-E-L, capital B-O-C-A, and Mario Giovanna, capital G-I-O-V-A-N-A. Fascism Today was published in hardcover by Pantheon Books, a division of Random House, and copyrighted 1969. And in an appendix, we find the following in Fascism Today. Now today, by the way, for the purposes of this book, is 1969, but the information is relevant and fascinating. The authors write, as a matter of fact, actually this is not in an appendix, but in the footnote section, as a matter of fact, a certain number of Nazis reached Cairo before Nasser came to power. Between 1948 and 1951, King Farouk employed a number of German experts, among these being Wilhelm Voss, V-O-S-S, who during the war had been in charge of the supply of weapons to the armed forces, and according to Der Spiegel of October 26, 1955, was warmly recommended by the West German government. General Wilhelm Farmbacher, F-A-H-R-M, I've also seen an N-B-A-C-H-E-R, Major General Oskar Munzel, M-U-N-Z-E-L, and the parachutist Colonel Gerhard Mertens, M-E-R-T-I-N-S. Gert Mertens in Egypt under Farouk. Later, of course, his buddy in both World War II and in the founding and operation of sometime BND front Merex, utilized by Manzar al-Qassar, Otto Skorzeny later joined Gerhard Mertens in Egypt.